Hello, and welcome back to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. Today, we're going to talk about reading readiness and all the things that have to do with that. We are excited to be back this week, and we hope that you are too. Welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
This is the podcast to encourage moms that have been at this homeschooling gig longer than 5 years and plan on sticking with it through the high school years. The long haulers, as we like to say. We want to help you have the greatest of all time homeschool that meets the needs of your family by encouraging you with real conversations on the issues that pop up as you've been in this homeschool lifestyle for years.
So it'll be fun to try and see if there's people out there that need the encouragement and if there's anything that we can do to help others as they get started on their journey. That'd be awesome. That's what we're here for.
How are you, Amanda?
Tired, Erin. How are you?
I'm a little tired myself. I don't know if it's all the rain and it's just made me really relaxed and not want to be motivated to do things. But
well, it's hard to, you can't do much. There's not much to do when it's so rainy and you got things to do. So I end up making lists and then taking naps and then making more lists and it makes me tired. Yeah. So I have a lot of notes about reading readiness. I've got a couple of kids that learned how to read differently than the norm, what we'd call the normal, which is just a setting on the dryer. But so I thought it might be important to talk about the pressures of getting our kids to read. And we as homeschool moms still kind of feel that pressure. Do you ever notice that you're feeling any of that pressure to teach or make sure your kids read by a certain age?
Oh my goodness. Yes. And especially when your first child that you're, I feel like that's kind of like the level one of homeschooling. You know, when you start, it's like, have you been able to teach your child to read? That's like the very first thing that you have. If you're starting when they're in kindergarten or like I was, and I didn't have an early reader, a very precocious child that was wanting to read.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stress as a first time homeschooler. First time walking my child through those things, we struggled.
Yeah, when we took out of public school, let's see, one was in fourth grade. Was that right? Fourth grade. And then one was in kindergarten. And I thought, well, at least the fourth grader kind of knows how to read, but the kindergartner might be screwed. Because I was so intimidated about having to teach him to read. And then he ended up having learning challenges and learning differences, and which was a big reason we needed to be homeschooling him. And so I felt those additional pressures like, oh, I'm really a bigger failure because he's not reading when everyone else is reading. And so I must be doing something wrong. Of course, now I know differently. You know, hindsight's 20/20.
Well, and the funny paradox or paradigm or whatever is thinking that way is, you think, oh, I must be doing something wrong. But really the thing that you're doing wrong is trying to push your kid to read when they're not ready.
Amen. Yes. 100%. Yes. Yeah. So not the whole point of this podcast episode is not sweating when your kids learn how to read, because developmentally, so if you Google this, I just Googled it. It says most children learn to read by age 7. Why are we pushing our kids to read by 4 and 5? You know, my son, even with his learning challenges and his learning differences, he wasn't really interested in learning how to read until he was about 7, you know, and even then, you know, we're reading a lot together and we're doing, you know, if you have your face in a book, even together, like, remember when Dani Breen was on, she talked about, you know, children learn at their father's knee and their mother's elbow. Well, they're at our elbows all the time reading and, you know, just having that exposure to books, there's going to become an interest there. And sometimes that just naturally gets picked up. So, but he's not a phonetic reader. And that's another thing we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Go on a soapbox about phonics is not always the way. I mean, if you can teach your kid phonics and that's the way they learn, then by all means do that. But there are other methods if your child is not a phonics reader, if they're not able for one reason or another to read phonetically. And there's a lot of people that can't sound things out. And the English language, the American English language is so not phonetic. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes. Oh my goodness. It's like, this rule applies at this time, except when this and this and this and this and this. So it's basically like the exception is that one word to the rule.
It's just crazy. Like, how do you teach that phonetically? And then you have a billion sight words that you just have to just know how to read, and and they don't follow any rule. Like, why? I don't understand why the whole thing. Yeah. So I was a very natural reader. I don't remember learning how to read. Do you remember learning how to read?
I just remember my dad would work with me. I was, I think, quote, an early reader. Mm-hmm. My dad was a reader. And so he was constantly reading. And I remember before kindergarten, and I only went to kindergarten half day. So it was like playtime. I was reading in kindergarten, and I remember him reading and showing me words. And I don't know, just one day it just clicked, and it just seemed like I just took off reading. So I was reading like at four. Yeah. Early five. Like,
so you remember three. That? I don't remember it at all. I don't remember learning how to read at all. And I don't remember learning how to spell. I mean, I just naturally, I don't know if that's just something that's natural for me or what, but you know, my older son, he just naturally knows how to spell. He just like, I didn't really have to teach him anything. And he just knows it. And it's a strength for him. But my younger son is like my husband and can't spell to save his life. And, you know, my husband was valedictorian of his college class, and he could not spell valedictorian. So like, you know, it's so funny, but you know, it's just that he's just so much like him. So we have to figure out a different way to do. We use Spelling Power, which was written by a homeschooling mom for spelling, and a lot of it's memorization, but it really has beefed up his spelling skills. And obviously we're not talking about spelling today, but it's still kind of is part of it. And spelling and reading, I learned, has to be differentiated with certain kids. And because just because you can read something doesn't mean you can spell it. And going through these things, like, you know, telling my son, close your eyes, imagine the word that you're wanting to spell. Can you see it? And tell me what the letters are. He's like, no, I see blackness. I'm like, really? How do you not see? Just close your eyes and look at the word. No, you can't do it. Can't do it.
Yeah.
Can you do that? Can you like close your eyes and see a word and be able to spell it?
Yeah, I spell it out that way.
That's, yeah, me too.
I'm more of a visual person anyway. So if I can see it, I can do it. But
and I thought that he was a visual person. And so I thought, well, that's just, and I thought everybody did that. I had no idea that that was something that was like only certain people know how to do. But so teaching him to spell, he looks at the shape of the word. And that's how he reads it. And so being able to differentiate, and vowels are really, really hard for him. Now, my son is not dyslexic. We've had lots of conversations about dyslexia. There's a book called The Gift of Dyslexia. There's a lot of gifted kids that are dyslexic and different ways to approach it. A lot of parents use like the Barton method, which teaches dyslexic kids phonics, which I disagree with as a principal. But if it works for you, then by all means, because it's forcing phonics on kids that don't learn phonics. Right. Mm-hmm. So like it's making a non-phonic kid rewire their brain to where they can read and do. And now somebody tell me I'm wrong, but that's what I understand the Barton method to be. And when I looked at the Barton method for my son, thinking that maybe he was stealth dyslexic or something. So I was frustrated with it, because how do you teach a kid that can't do phonics? And it just doesn't make logical sense to me. So there's a couple of other methods. So like the Orton-Gillingham was one method that I looked up, and that's the one that Barton uses. It's a multisensory structured sequential. See, it's sequential. So if you're a non-sequential learner, right, there's audio sequential, and then there's visual spatial learners, which my son's a visual spatial. So you have audio sequential. Well, this is a sequential program. So you have to be able to do things in sequence, in order. So if you can't do that, if that's not the way your brain is wired, then it doesn't work. And so anyway, that's the Orton-Gillingham, which is what the Bartons use. And then, you know, with my son, the way we actually got him reading was, and one way to help him with like the sight words, the quote unquote sight words, which is to start, just how to start him, was using snap words. And snap words is where they have the word and it looks like a picture. So like the word pull, for example, there's like the L's are little people and they're pulling a rope across the P and the U, you know, so it, it is actually makes these sight words into an action word.
Gotcha. Right?
And yeah. So they look at the word as a whole and they're able to remember that for whatever reason, the shape of the word and how it looks and all mm-hmm. of that. And snap words, they say that it teaches phonics, they say, but I don't see how it teaches phonics, but, and orthography, which I'm not sure what orthography is. Have you heard that term? Instant word recognition, which makes sense. Spelling, writing, comprehension, and fluency. That's what's on the SnapWords website. And so there's multiple, like you can get them on Amazon. So we can use our affiliate link on our episode when it airs. But there's where you buy packets of cards, and you know those card or the word walls that you can get when kids are mm-hmm. little. And I would just switch out the words, and we'd have sight words on that, and we'd practice reading them there. And he really loved that. Like he enjoyed looking at the pictures, and he had favorite ones. And
yeah.
Then there's also whole language learning. So you can do phonics versus the whole language. The whole language teaching is teaching children to read by recognizing words as whole pieces of language, which is how my son learns to read. And there's a whole book on it. I think I mentioned it in another episode. The book is called, Invitations. And it teaches us how to teach whole word learning. And it's a completely different approach. I mean, there's an excerpt from the book says literacy acquisition is a natural process. So teaching our kids naturally, we're not forcing reading on our kids. We're, you know, obviously we're giving them the environment where reading becomes part of life. And so that becomes a natural process. And the mm-hmm. interest is there. It also talks about becoming literate is a social act and search for meaning. Literacy development is continuous. Genuine literacy acts are authentic and meaningful. It's just so natural and developmentally appropriate, I guess. And so if most kids are reading by the age of 7, does that mean that you're wrong or you're bad if your kid isn't learning by the age of 7? No, there's a lot of kids that need to learn later than that. And mm-hmm. having the reading readiness, which I found on another website, and here I am on a soapbox, but it says the reading readiness, the different developmental things to watch for would be like visual identification skill, which is picture matching, visual discrimination skill, which is finding missing items in a picture or find a shape missing, visual analysis, which is sequencing pictures, drawing a missing part or finding a mistake in a picture. Visual tracking, which is doing like mazes or tracking lines, identifying letters and sight words. So they're already doing all this other stuff with all these other pictures. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of transition that over into matching and identifying letters and sight words, similar clusters of letters, you know, noticing similarities and differences, paying attention mm-hmm. to the sound, you know, all of that sounds so natural to me and not forced. Right. So if we're providing that environment where it becomes a natural thing. And then the last thing was a visual memory. Nothing on that talked about age.
Uh-huh.
Right. So when a child is developmentally looking into, and there's this natural curiosity for looking at these visual things that they like playing memory games, if they like doing mazes in a book, if they like finding the missing pieces in a picture, or, you know, things like that, then they sequencing pictures or drawing a missing part in a picture. Like that's mm-hmm. all natural part. That's all natural progression. And there's nothing that says doing it at age 3 or doing it at age 5 is
right.
inappropriate.
Well, and I think a lot of us have heard about the studies of Finnish children. They don't start formal learning until 7. And I can tell you, I have a friend that is from Finland and she was fluent in I think about 5 languages and had 2 that she was kind of working on, but her English was like better than mine. And she confirmed that, you know, like they spend a lot of time outdoors and they play and there isn't that pressure to learn these things, but she, you know, they do school differently there. And obviously they're around a lot of different nationalities and countries that have different languages that would be pertinent to know if you're going to travel across the border. But I just find that very interesting. Yeah. My oldest came to us reading already when we adopted her, And then, so my first child that I was homeschooling is my oldest son, and he was actually in preschool for 2 years before we started homeschooling. And he would go to a 2 or 3 day a week program for a half day. And, you know, that was one of the things his teacher would say is, you know, he's still having trouble recognizing letters. And I know we've never had him tested for any kind of learning disabilities or anything like that, but I do know my mom was dyslexic and had dysgraphia and had a lot of learning issues. And some of the things that I was learning as she was getting diagnosed as an adult, she didn't know this as a child, were some things that I see or saw in him when I was teaching him to read, and just having that real struggle, like remembering what the letters look like or not flipping them around or totally skipping whole words and sentences when he was doing his own writing at times. And so it was really challenging for me because, like I said earlier, as a first time homeschooling mom trying to teach your child, and then you see these friends who have precocious children that are reading at 4, you know, I was feeling very much like I'm already off to a bad start in homeschooling. I don't even know how to teach him to read. And we struggled through a couple of different curriculum and then landed on teach your child to read in 100 easy lessons. And for whatever reason, that's what did it for him. And he was close to 8 before he was able to start really reading sentences and being very fluent in reading. And I will say also, no matter what curriculum you're using, pray for your children, because one of the things that I was consistently praying was, you know, God, teach me to teach him and give him a desire to learn. And please help him to be able to, not only when he's able to read, to enjoy reading. And that kid now reads like all the time. He reads novels and high level, you know, college level books and has no issue at all. And it didn't matter that, you know, he started reading at whatever age. And then my second son that I was teaching, that child just absorbed through osmosis. You know, we started the whole, like, teach your child to read in 100 easy lessons. And by lesson 50, he was fluently reading. And so for a couple of years after that, he would say, I don't know how to read. I never finished that book on how to teaching me how to read. And I'm like, you didn't need to, buddy. We read the last page on lesson 50 and you could do the whole thing. So we didn't need to finish that. So, and he was also coming to me writing his name and I didn't teach him that. So kids learn at different speeds, but I'm really glad that we're visiting this topic because, you know, we talk about long haul homeschoolers and a lot of us were teaching our first child to read like 15 years ago. And I now have a 5-year-old that I'm just getting ready to start teaching. And like you were just saying, she's showing me cues that she's ready and she sees the other kids reading. So it's a little bit different when she's your 4th versus your 1st, but that is true. She wants me to write down sentences and she'll copy what I write. And she's showing me a lot of interest in reading and asking what words say and noticing signs or noticing, hey, that letter's in my name and it's in this, and this is the uppercase letter and that's the lowercase one. And so she's really showing me that she's wanting, and she does ask, will you teach me how to read? So we'll see how quickly she gets it. And if she doesn't, as like an experienced mom now, I'm not feeling that pressure that if she's going into kindergarten in the fall, that she's quote behind because right. She is or isn't doing something. And that's just so freeing. And the kids pick up on that because I'm sure part of my older son's stress was me freaking out inside, like, oh, get it, please get it this time.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just so organic and it's so beautiful to see. And it's so relaxed. And I feel like you're setting her up for enjoyment of reading, and it won't be a task that she has to complete. It'll be something that she gets to do. And right. That we get to set the tone for how they view their world experiences. And reading is one of those things that sets that world experience for the rest of their lives. And so when we're feeling stressed about it, they're going to feel stressed about it. And, and that could, you know, I have a kid that's writing novels, but has a hard time focusing long enough to finish reading them, you know? And it's so fun. And he's just so much like me because I, you know, there's just so many things, like I will want to read a book. but I will fall asleep so quickly. And I don't know if it's just my attention span or something. I struggle with reading through things. But I mean, if you look at it, if you think about it, we're reading all day long, every day, you know, we're reading mm-hmm. our phones and we're reading the news and we're reading curriculum with our kids and things. And so when it comes time for us to read something for ourselves, it's daunting and it's tiring and, you know, we're over it, but I struggle with it. And so I really love books, and I have a whole room full of books that I have not read.
But, yeah, I do too. And every year I make a rule, like, I'm not going to buy any new books until I've read every single one on my shelf. And guess what?
Yeah, right, Erin.
There's a new book in my Amazon cart probably right now. Yeah. I just got one yesterday. Yeah. Well, and I think it's also interesting too, but just because a child is an early reader, quote, early, doesn't mean that they're going to love reading. Like my son that just kind of picked it up, he actually says every day, I hate reading. And if I ask him to read even like a graphic novel, he's like, oh, I have to read. Like, can't you just read it to me? I just don't want to do this.
Well, he's kind of dramatic anyway.
Just a smidge. Yeah. But then my son who was kind of taking it more time to learn that skill, he is off and running. Like as soon as he picked it up, he was just never putting a book down. Like mm-hmm. we were trying to read through a Harry Potter series or something. And he's like, you're not reading it fast enough. And I was on book three or something. And he just took the rest of them and finished them himself.
So, well, that's awesome. And, you know, you're saying, you know, him saying that, can you just read this for me? I have heard, now someone, you know, send us a message and correct me if I'm wrong, but I have heard that listening to a book ignites the same parts of the brain as reading a book. Mm-hmm. So if you're reading to your children, in theory, if that's correct, then that's still igniting that same part of the brain as if they were reading it themselves. I love listening to audiobooks. That's just, yeah. I can do something else. I can work something with my hands. I can, you know, be active in the garden. I can, you know, be doing something that I think is important while I'm listening to a book. And so I'm kind right. of killing two birds with one stone, but I'm not sitting still. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I have ADHD. I need to be moving all the time. I don't know. Something's wrong with me. I know that. But, you know, so listening to, like, I can, so like the book that you recommended, what was that?
The Great Pretender. The
Great Pretender. Yes. I was listening to that while I was doing sewing projects and getting annoyed when children or husbands would come into the room and ask me a question. Like, uh-huh. hold on, I have to pause my book. Now you can ask me a question.
I know. I still have, like, you know, my earbuds, and I don't have cordless ones. And so there's an obvious cord right there, and I'm doing right. dishes or doing something, because I also love listening to different podcasts and audiobooks and, you know, and someone will just come in and start talking to me, and I'm like whipping my phone out of my back pocket. Like yeah. I have to pause this and then go back 15 seconds.
Be really you know, loud like, about it too. Like stomp your foot and yeah. you know, hit your nail on the phone. Fine, I'll pause this so you can ask me a question. Yeah. I have to be really dramatic about it. Play it
out. Oh, yeah.
Not that you they care, to. But it feels right. better.
It does. Yeah. We're so petty.
Totally.
But oh man. So yeah, back to reading to your kids or them learning to read. I, you know, I'm totally fine too. Like with my kid that hates reading. I don't care. I'll read a book to him. You know, mm-hmm. if I've got the time or I will have sometimes like you read this paragraph, I'll read that paragraph or you read a page, I'll read a page, just mm-hmm. get him reading out loud as well, because I don't want to not ask him to do something that is super important. And hopefully one day he'll change his mind because I love reading and, you know, yep. but you know, people that have homeschooled like us for 10 plus years now, we've got older kids, and I love reading aloud with my older kids because there's books that maybe are higher level that we just break down a lot of words and have to get the dictionary on my phone out and, or we'll start Googling something or watching a YouTube video because it brings up something. Like we were reading a book about something about Marvels or something. And, it was firsthand accounts of things in that, volcano that exploded Krakatoa was like amazing. And we just start learning about Krakatoa and how I think it was 30 miles away. Sailors' eardrums were popping because it was such an intense explosion. So then we start digging in that. And so it's like, if I had just, you know, said, here, go read this book to yourself, I would miss out on some of those things. And now we talk about things like, oh, remember Krakatoa and how awesome that was, like those sailors' eardrums and just the waves that were happening. And it was just decimating this island. And yeah.
They're picking up the context clues too. When you're pronouncing big words like that, they've never seen or heard. Uh-huh. And they can oftentimes figure out what that word means just by listening to the rest of the paragraph or the rest of the sentence. So yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely love it.
You mentioned earlier too, how you like to be doing something with your hands. And that was always my rule with the kids. If I'm reading aloud and you can narrate back to me what I just said and not just repeat the last sentence, you know, and then don't understand the context, then you'd have to stop with playing Legos or doing whatever drawing you're doing. And you'd have to just sit and listen. So my kids, you know, they're very tactile people and very engineering minds. And so I've always allowed my kids to play at, you know, a decent decibel while I'm reading aloud. Because if I'm having to scream or over them to get the story out and my throat hurts by the end of the day, that's not ever pleasant. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that either.
I think. Right. Yeah. And you know, my youngest has dyspraxia and part of that is tracking issues. So something he was doing with the occupational therapist was she would put letters on the wall and she would shout a letter and then he had to throw a beanbag at the letter. I'm not quite sure how that helps with tracking issues, but it worked really well for him. And there's, you know, there's like see-through plastic, blue or red sheets that you can put uh-huh. over a piece of paper or in the book that they're reading. And that helps somehow with tracking issues. And oftentimes he can't read more than a paragraph or two because of his tracking issues, you know, and even having a piece of paper up underneath the line so he keeps the line straight. Uh-huh. But, you know, you end up with eye fatigue because his eyes are working so much harder than mine are, you know, because uh-huh. of his tracking, just keep being able to keep his eyes on the right word at the right line and then knowing what the word is and, you know, all of those things. If you think about all the steps that they go through just for reading a page, but on his computer, like we were talking about earlier, he was testing this morning and he had a language part and a spelling part and things, and he will tilt his computer screen to where the light isn't shining directly in his face. It's like pointed mm-hmm. downwards, and that helps him to see it a little bit better. He doesn't get so tired, and he will also highlight using his mouse. He'll highlight the paragraph that he's reading, and somehow that helps him to stay on it. So there's lots of little tidbits and tricks and things that, and I'm not going to yell at him for that. You know, whatever it does, whatever it takes for him to get that job done.
Yeah.
Cares, you know,
right.
They're accomplishing the end goal. Yeah.
Well, and I would say this too, to encourage moms, sometimes there are other issues besides just your kid doesn't want to sit still, or they don't want to read, or they just aren't in the mood to learn, or, you know, it could very well be an eye issue or a brain eye connection issue. And so if it's been a struggle for a while and you're not seeing progress and, you know, your kid is 8, 9, 10, or, you know, having some struggles, maybe it is time to take them in if you haven't already started that process to say, maybe this is more than just a kid that doesn't want to read.
Right. And there's,
you know, there's reasons why.
There's a visual occupant. Sometimes optometrists also have a subspecialty where it's a vision therapy. I forget what it's called exactly. It's like, it's vision therapy essentially. And he had his eyes dilated. They did different tests than, you know, they have special dilation tools that they've used that they do not use on adults. Mm-hmm. It's completely different for children. And then they had a whole visual evaluation done to determine what could be wrong. And that's how we discovered the tracking issues. Like she knew because once his eyes were dilated, he couldn't make up for that. You know, he couldn't correct it and work harder. Like his eyes had to relax to show them what was wrong. And so they were able to see a lot of things. And then the vision therapist was able to give the occupational therapist, she actually went to the appointment with us and was able to give her some tips and tricks on things that she could do during occupational therapy. So he wouldn't have to have vision therapy on top of that. The occupational therapist was able to do the things for him. So there are lots of things like that, that a lot of times we don't know about. We don't have an understanding of. it's really important to, you know, be paying attention to those things and give our kids that healthy environment and set that tone and then, you know, be watching for stuff like that. I mean, I had no idea that that was even a thing, but you know, he wasn't reading and he wasn't progressing. I knew it wasn't dyslexia. And, you know, it's like you start
ruling things out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it just, one thing led to another and that's what we discovered. So, you know, you have to keep the faith. I mean, maybe I'm still a terrible reading teacher. My kids still will very well be terrible at it. But in addition to that, he has issues.
Yeah. It's twofold, Amanda.
Right.
Just kidding. One of the things that I heard, and I heard this after my kids had learned to read, my older ones, and it was so encouraging and something that I wish that I had heard right away, was we were at local support group meeting and we had a speaker, Steve Lambert, come, and he and his wife, Jane, created the Before 5 in a Row and 5 in a Row curriculum. And they're just fantastic people, great resources for the homeschool community and just their knowledge and understanding of what it's like to homeschool your kids, because they did it for so long in the 80s and 90s. And so he said, you know, no job application, no boss that's hiring your child is going to say, and, you know, how old were you when you learned to read? They don't care. As long as your kid can write and read and fill out that application and do their job. No one has ever asked in the history of jobs, like, how old were you when you started reading? Because it doesn't matter.
Right.
It really doesn't matter. And I just, hopefully we can speak to some of these moms that are listening that have been struggling or carrying this guilt that their child wasn't reading, like when Susie down the street was. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know your child, take the pressure off yourself so that you can take the pressure off of them. And if you're like us, and you know, I've got now my senior that's coming school year, and I will have a kindergartner as well. And we're revisiting all of the things to do with school. You know, I just feel like I'm just parenting a totally different way than I was when my boys were little. I'm so much more relaxed and that pressure isn't there. And if I had known what I know now, I would have, I wish I could go back and change just how many hours I spent worrying over their academic success because they weren't reading when I thought that they should, or what I was being told, you know, like who tells people
that? Right. Exactly. And I don't know where we get that pressure from. I don't know. It's sometimes maybe it's self-induced pressure, you know, or societal pressure, but
I think it goes back to some of the whole, like, homeschoolers that were, quote, pioneering it back in the 80s when it started. They had a lot to prove to show that they were educating their children. And there was a huge push for graduating your child at 14 so they could go to college, or graduating your high schooler with a bachelor's degree or something like that. And I just feel like things have shifted because we don't necessarily carry that stigma of having to have your child be an overachiever in order to show that you successfully schooled them at home.
That's a fair point. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
There's some of that.
Yeah.
And it's just that natural beast of comparison. Women want their children to be the best that they could be. And when you see that your child isn't where someone else is at that same age, it can be frustrating, or, you know, but that has more to do with you as mom than it does. And that's a whole other episode. Well, thank you for listening today. I hope you've picked up one or two tips, or maybe just let that burden go. If you have any questions, you can reach us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram @goathomeschoolingpodcast, or our Facebook page or group, Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda on Facebook. We look forward to hearing from you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to suggest topics for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, find us at Goat Homeschooling on Facebook, on Instagram @goathomeschool, and email us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.